shift that I sense is that you have a president that wants to respect and include Indian tribes in policymaking decisions.
President Obama's new senior advisor on Native American issues settles into her job. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 26th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the local take on a global day of action.
I walked into my English class and I asked, who wants to help me save the world?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business. ACS connects companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world.
The U.S. Small Business Administration is preparing to issue new regulations changing the federal oversight of the 8A program that allows regional and village Native corporations to avoid the competitive bidding process on many federal purchases. The director of the Native Affairs Office of the SBA, Clara Pratt, today told the State House Economic Development Committee and the Senate World Trade Committee that in recent years, SBA inspectors, the Government Accountability Office, and Congress have identified what she called challenges in the program, and with Alaska Native corporations in particular. She said that is the reason for the new regulations.
We are committed to receiving full input from all of our stakeholders and committed to going out and having dialogue with Alaska Native corporations, tribally owned entities, and Native Hawaiian organizations on the effect that the proposed draft regulations will have on their companies. Overall, the success of the 8A program has been a strong step in the direction of trust and treaty obligation and fulfillment. Its success has allowed for capital infusion into some of the most rural and economically depressed regions while providing a value-added service for the government.
Maver Carey, the president and CEO of the Kuskokwim Corporation, talked about the importance of the program. She said the corporation now has the ability to respond to the needs of the community it serves.
We have huge unemployment, very high cost of living, few economic opportunities, high teenage pregnancy rate, drug and alcohol abuse, and very, very high suicide rates. We just did stock transfers for three people who committed suicide who were in their mid-20s. Within the last 3 weeks.
Carey said because of the 8A program, the corporation has been able to provide economic benefits through its dividends to grant scholarships to students, some of whom are now studying at the master's level, and to offer employment opportunities to the residents of the area. The SBA draft regulations are due to be released on Wednesday. The first ever senior advisor to a president on Native American issues says she hopes to see better dialogue and increased respect by the federal government to tribes. Kim Teehee joined President Obama's Domestic Policy Council in July as his advisor on Native American affairs. Her job is to incorporate Native issues in the broader policy direction of the White House. APRN's Libby Casey recently spoke with Teehee and has more.
Kimberly Teehee sits on the council that coordinates domestic policy in the White House and offers advice to President Obama. She says her historic job is one part of the administration's plan to forge an improved relationship with tribes.
The shift that I sense is that you have a president that wants to respect and include Indian tribes in policymaking decisions, number one. Number two, he wants to honor the nation-to-nation relationship and acknowledges the federal trust responsibility that this administration has to tribal nations. And that is a big shift.
Teehee says the Bush administration tended not to acknowledge trust responsibilities when crafting positions on Native issues. Now, she says, Obama wants to embrace that relationship. During the Bush years, Teehee worked as a senior advisor to Congressman Dale Kildee, a Michigan Democrat who co-chairs the House Native American Caucus. Teehee is a member of the Cherokee Nation and grew up in Oklahoma and Chicago. She says one priority of the Obama administration is public safety in Indian country. She points to problems of domestic violence and abuse.
There's, you know, a huge jurisdictional gap that hinders law enforcement in Indian land, and there are certainly a lot of things that can be done in order to enhance the tribal justice systems, and not only in Alaska, but in the lower 48. And we certainly are urging a collaboration between the agencies
obviously Department of Justice being a major stakeholder in that, as well as Department of Interior, but other agencies as well.
Teehy says the Interior Department shouldn't be the only branch of federal government that works with tribes. She'd like to see more collaboration and direct contact with other agencies, and she says her role helps with that, since she's in top-level meetings and can make the connections.
My job is to work in a collaborative way with all of my colleagues here in the executive offices of the president. And my Native American issues, Alaska Native issues, cross-cut in so many areas, whether it's education, you know, transportation, agriculture, economic development, you name it. And so I work with everybody on all those issues as they relate to Indian country.
One of the big issues before Congress is the controversial Small Business Administration's 8A program, which gives advantages to Alaska Native corporations in gaining federal contracts. Teehy calls it a meaningful economic tool, not just for Alaska Natives, but other Indian tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations too.
It is a definite valuable program to maintain, and I am aware that there are some members of Congress who want to examine the program, and they have some concerns about how, you know, the program is used, or have some concerns about, in some instances, how they perhaps want to impose caps where there presently are no caps on the contracts that are received by the recipients. I mean, I am aware of that, but at the same time, I mean, certainly that is a very important program to maintain.
Teehy says she and her colleagues have been briefed by the Native American Contractors Association and are keeping an eye on the situation. The topic may come up next month when the White House hosts a Tribal Nations Conference. Teehy says they hope it's the start of a dialogue.
The president has stated that he wants Indian tribes to have a seat at the table when it comes to policy decisions that impact their communities.
Kim Teehy has not yet visited Alaska, but says she has cousins who married Alaska Natives and now live in the state. And Teehy says she does hope to make her first trip north soon. In Anchorage, I'm Libby Casey.
Two construction workers injured in an accident this morning at the state capitol building have been medevaced to Seattle. The men, whose names have not been released, were working for Silver Bow Construction, connecting a sky bridge from the capitol to the Thomas B. Stewart Legislative Office Building, when their forklift toppled over. Silver Bow project manager Jeremy Adams says he's not sure what caused the accident.
No, you know, and I wasn't on site, so, you know, and that's what everybody's going to get to the bottom of.
The men were initially transported to Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau. Bartlett spokesman Jim Strader says they've been taken to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle in serious condition. Adam says a third man who was operating the forklift did not suffer any injuries. The forklift was set up on an incline on Seward Street between the Capitol and the Stewart office building. Adam says they've had heavy equipment working on the street throughout the project.
Well, they had to install the sky bridge here, so that was done with a crane, and yeah, there's been equipment up here before.
The Stewart Building is the former Scottish Rite Temple and was renamed by the legislature earlier this year. Silver Bow is scheduled to complete the renovation and sky bridge work by November 6th. Adam says the accident shouldn't delay the project. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, picking up the pieces after the Eagle flood.
I told Kate, think of it as an Easter egg hunt, and it was kind of fun. Every now and then I'd hear a yell through the woods, hey, I found the blah, 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 you know?
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
This flu season, every Alaskan should roll up their sleeves and fight the flu by making plans to get both the swine flu and regular seasonal flu vaccines. In the meantime, you can fight the flu by regularly disinfecting hard surfaces, avoid touching your mouth, nose, and eyes, and wear a face mask if you are sick and in close contact with others. For more information on how to fight the flu, go to pandemicflu.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The 2009 Alaska Federation of Natives Convention wrapped up on Saturday with delegates voting on a wide range of resolutions. Of the 44 put forward, 43 passed. Resolutions ranged from seeking better protection of oceans, fish, and game to more involvement of Alaska Natives in managing resources, to requests for VPSO housing, and creating a lead federal agency to assist communities needing to relocate because of coastal erosion. Artists, skin sewers, carvers, and weavers were seeing robust sales and business on the last day. Booth proprietors at the hugely popular arts and crafts portion of the annual AFN gathering said the stagnant economy was not noticeably affecting their sales this year.
I'm Ed Mile. I live here in Anchorage. My mother's from Point Hope.
And so what are you selling, Ed?
Tiles that I make, made out of the local clay from the mudflats. People like using tiles in their kitchens and bathroom, but a lot of these have nice designs on them that can actually be hung up on the wall as art. A lot of people buy them to give them as gifts, and they get great feedback from whoever they give them to, and it actually pays the bills and the IRS, and I'm happy doing it. And this is my third AFN, and this is my best show. I sell more here than anywhere else, any single event.
My name is Darlene Nichols, originally from Kipnik, Alaska. I live in Cordova now.
Okay. How long have you been making baskets?
Probably when I started really making baskets when I was 24 years old. I've seen mom and my grandmas make the baskets. They didn't really sit down and say, you gotta do this, you gotta do this. I learned from watching them.
I'm Lena Charlie, come from Chistochina, about 50 miles away from Glen Ellen, and I took it off. I own a dude's saw. I used to run dock and stuff, but not anymore. Now I just sit and working for sewing, moccasin and stuff. I always do good, so I don't give up.
Raleigh Morrison, Heidelberg. We've got hats that my wife makes from take the cedar, your yellow cedar off the trees and peel them and cure them for maybe about three months. Then you could make the hats out of it. You split it, roll it up, dry it, and then when she's ready to start making the hat, she puts it in water for maybe probably about 10, 15 minutes, and then she could start putting the hats together or start, you know, weaving them. Well, that's a good shot in the arm. Pay some of the bills anyway. And then the big thing about it is seeing people that we could visit with. It's a highlight just to see our friends come by.
Nancy Kakiak from Shishmaref. Catch the seals and I get them tanned and cut them and sew with them. It's better this year than last year. It helps me buy groceries for my kids and, you know, stuff that we can't get in the rural area. That way, if I can provide for my kids, I can have that extra money to pay the bills.
Voices from the last day of the AFN gathering in Anchorage. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell has appointed a longtime member of the Juneau School Board as the first ever director of rural education for the state of Alaska. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The appointment of Phyllis Carlson as the director of rural education was announced during the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage. Carlson says the new job will be a big challenge, but she's excited about the opportunity to focus on rural education.
Position. The state hasn't done this before, and so the main responsibilities I'll have are to be a liaison to the communities, and I think the whole idea is to improve academic success for, of course, our students first of all, but just to improve educational success for our state as well.
Phyllis Carlson is a lifelong Alaskan who was born in Kodiak and raised in Chignik. She says the main challenge is to make the public education system relevant to rural students.
You know, we do have technology that I think is going to be very useful in terms of the distance pieces. I think those pieces we can address, but more importantly, we need to have community involvement in the curriculums and the connection to our students.
Carlson says one of her main goals is to help school districts reach their mandated benchmarks for student performance. which she claims goes beyond just getting students ready to take tests.
We can't keep doing the same old thing, which is, I think, something that we've been trying to do, kind of approaches in the same way. So I think this position will be looking at some educational reforms, and in order to do that, we'll have to have community involvement.
Carlson will begin her duties in late November, and she'll be based in Juneau. She'll report to the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development, and it's anticipated that she'll work with the Governor's Rural Advisor. Carlson has lots of experience working on rural issues, including working with the Rural Systemic Initiative of the Alaska Federation of Natives. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Native Village of Quinnahock will be receiving $450,000 in emergency funding to prepare homes before the upcoming winter. KDLG's Adam Kane has this report.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development spokesman Lee Jones says that when HUD Secretary Sean Donovan and Deputy Secretary Ron Sims recently toured rural Alaska, they were alerted to the situation in Quinnahock, where some 55 homes were found unprepared for the upcoming winter.
A considerable number of homes in the village, which is located on the Bering Sea, are in very bad shape. And one of the things we obviously have learned from that is that obviously the kinds of housing designs that may have worked in the lower 48 don't necessarily work in Alaska and in the villages of Alaska.
Jones believes that the money will be available this week and hopes that the 55 homes can be repaired before the winter.
We moved mountains to try to make sure that not only that the grant was submitted, but also, number two, that the grant was considered and approved so that they could get to work as quickly as possible.
He says that many of the houses have rotting wood, which is causing insulation to fall out of place and weatherization seals to break. He says that the funds will be used on a house-by-house basis to assess and ultimately repair each house so it can be lived in throughout the winter. Jones says that the grant that Quinnahock received is for imminent threats and that all of Alaska's rural villages are eligible to apply for the same funding.
Obviously, the problem in Quinnahock very well may be a problem that other villages throughout Alaska are experiencing, certainly the cold weather. A cold climate housing research center suggests that Quinnahock has a very serious problem, but it is a problem that is not unique and may indeed be found in other villages across the state.
Jones feels that to avoid future emergency situations, HUD needs to continue to look into sustainably engineered houses, specifically for the extreme cold temperatures found in Alaska.
Beyond dealing with the immediate issue of how do we make homes fit for habitation during the winter, is the larger issue of how do we make sure that we support housing that is sustainable and sustainable within the context of Alaska's topography, Alaska's climate, and the way things work in Alaska.
Jones believes that if specialized housing can be designed and tested here in Alaska, it could eventually be adapted to other cold climate locations throughout the country. Many Alaskan villages receive annual funding from HUD. There are approximately 270 Native villages and tribal organizations in Alaska who receive annual HUD funding through Indian Housing and Indian Community Development Block grants. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kame.
The state is seeking applications for $50 million in alternative energy project grants. The request for proposals is the third round of a grant program started by the state legislature in 2008 when oil prices spiked. The program is administered by the state's Alaska Energy Authority. AEA Alternative Energy and Efficiency Program Manager Peter Krimp says $125 million in grants have already funded 107 projects across the state, including a major wind farm in Kodiak, a hydro project in Gustavus, and ground source heat pumps in Juneau. Krimp says the state grants can fund projects at any stage of development.
Obviously, the further along, the more defined the project is, the better.
Krimp says one goal is to spread the money around the entire state and help those communities suffering the highest cost of energy.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com. And by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Eagle residents are settling in for winter nearly 7 months after record spring flooding devastated the Yukon River community. People from the city and nearby Native Village spent the spring, summer, and fall dealing with the aftermath of high water and ice that destroyed and damaged dozens of buildings, downed power lines, and crushed vehicles and boats. Andy Basich, who organized the local recovery effort, says residents are still reeling from the experience.
They're still a little bit in shock. I mean, people are settling back in and getting back into their lives, but I don't think this event has fully really been felt by everyone. You know, we've all been scrambling to try and get our lives in some kind of order for the winter. And I think as winter goes on and people have time to reflect on it, I think in the springtime maybe we'll see a little bit more of how they really feel about it.
Much has been done in recent months to repair what the flood damaged or swept away. There was a massive cleanup, salvage, and rebuilding effort. Residents got help from a wide variety of sources, and Basich says everyone came together to get the job done before winter.
Samaritan's Purse and the Mennonite Disaster Service and the people from Eagle and the state and the federal agencies, it just gelled, and everybody kind of complimented each other.
The recovery included the construction of 13 new homes. Federal disaster relief funding paid for materials, with additional support and labor from businesses and nonprofit groups. Basich says he was also impressed by individuals who showed up to help in Eagle.
You see a big organization come in, and you kind of have these expectations that they're going to accomplish a lot, but there are a lot of individuals that came on their own and spent time there that did an amazing amount of work and really took the workload away from other people to free them up to do other things. And that was really quite essential to the success of the program.
Basich says there's still work to be done in Eagle. Renters whose lost homes were not covered by government relief programs still need places to live. Basich says the plan is to use leftover donations and materials to build them homes next spring. For now, after months spearheading the recovery in town, Basich has turned his attention to rebuilding his remote downriver homestead. Basich, his partner Kate Rourke, and their sled dogs were airlifted from the property last spring after a river surge ripped buildings from foundations and killed one of their dogs. Basich says they're optimistic about rebuilding despite what happened.
You know, even though there's a lot of work, we love being there, and it's a great place to have our dog teams, and we enjoy being around people, but we really love the solitude that we have there in the wintertime. It's pretty special.
Basich says they've accomplished a lot in recent weeks, resetting buildings, putting in a new dog yard, and gathering possessions scattered by the flood.
It was kind of fun hunting around, a little disappointing at times, you know, to see what made it and what didn't. But, you know, I told Kate, think of it as an Easter egg hunt. And it was kind of fun. Every now and then I'd hear a yell through the woods, "Hey, I found the blah, blah, blah," you know.
Basich says the Eagle area landscape looks very different as a result of the flood. He says the water and ice carved channels in the forest and left the riverbanks denuded of trees and vegetation for miles. More than a dozen communities across Alaska participated in the worldwide 350 Day of Action on Saturday. That number is the CO2 level in parts per million that many scientists believe is the safe upper limit for the atmosphere. The planet is currently edging close to 390. Alaska's participants hope the one-day event spurs more action leading up to the global climate change negotiations in Denmark this December. APRN's Annie Feit has more.
The 350.org website is calling it the most widespread day of environmental action in the planet's history. People in 181 countries participated, holding up signs or drawing out the number 350 with their bodies. In Kincaid Park in Anchorage, about 100 people gathered, many with skis, snowshoes, or sleds. They had a simple message.
350, we love our snow!
Terry Pauls, an environmental educator in Anchorage, helped organize the Kincaid event. She says participants wanted to communicate to world leaders that science should trump politics in the global debate on climate change.
Most of the photos have nothing in them but the people, their place, and the number 350. And the idea was to show these photos, which didn't include any of those languages that might be barriers, to world leaders in slideshows and in all kinds of ways between now and the meeting in Copenhagen.
Paul says one of her favorite images from around the world has the number 350 artfully drawn out in the sand with the message, "There is no planet B." University of Alaska Southeast student David Moriarty organized a gathering in Juneau, but he found out about the project late and had just 1 week to put it together.
I walked into my English class and I asked, "Who wants to help me save the world?"
Only one person raised her hand, but she happened to be a motivated organizer and a professional photographer. In other words, exactly what Moriarty needed. Together, they convinced 42 people to get together to spell out the number 350. Moriarty says, in today's world, it's easy to feel like you can't have an impact, but this event helped convince him otherwise.
Well, it was really inspirational. You know, I felt, for the first time, I felt really connected to the world as a whole, and suddenly it's like, you know, things like politics and biases, they didn't really matter. It was like, you know, everyone was on the planet together, and at the end of the day, we were all just people.
Grade school students in the Southeast community of Gustavus came up with their own unique take on the project. They decided to turn 350 T-shirts into reusable bags to bring attention to the problem of plastic waste in their community. Fourth grader Bethany Bolke says she hadn't done any sewing before, but it wasn't too hard, and it was for a good cause.
I think it would help our community to stop using so much plastic, because we've looked in our trash and it's mainly all plastic, so we're trying to reduce it.
Bolke's teacher, Jessie Soder, helped the students organize the event. She says it's easy for kids to be overwhelmed by global issues, so they decided to look at what was possible in their own community.
The way I approach it is trying to make it more local, like trying to help kids to understand and appreciate the world immediately around them, not looking at the big issues like worldwide, you know, what's happening to our world, but, you know, what's happening to our town and what can we do and how can we be responsible citizens of our town.
15 volunteers helped the students sew all 350 bags in just one day. Tomorrow, the students will distribute them to stores throughout the community. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Mike Mason and Adam Kane in Dillingham, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by GrantStation, your fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com, serving Alaskan organizations for over 10 years. Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.